You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're talking about what the future holds for reproductive health care as hundreds of bills are introduced in legislatures this year. Wisconsin's four abortion bills were passed by the legislature and vetoed by Governor Evers in June. And then earlier this month, the U.S. Supreme Court said it would hear arguments in a Louisiana law that requires abortion clinics to have admitting privileges at a hospital within 30 miles. Have you been watching the courts on issues around reproductive health? What do you consider to be reproductive rights? Does it involve access to abortion or birth control, one or the other, or both? What's your take here? We're at 800-642-1234. Attorney Nancy Northup is president of the Center for Reproductive Rights. She has led the organization since 2003, and it is representing the Louisiana abortion providers in the case June Medical Services versus Dr. Rebecca Gee that is before the Supreme Court right now. Nancy, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me on this morning.
Take us to this case before the high court that has agreed to hear this abortion case out of Louisiana. What is at issue here?
Well, what's at issue here is actually the very same issue that we had before the Supreme Court 3 years ago in Whole Women's Health versus Hellerstedt. It's the same issue. It was decided
out of Texas.
That's right, out of Texas. And it was about restrictions that Texas had put that were medically unnecessary on clinics in that state. And including those restrictions was a requirement that doctors at the clinics have an admitting privilege at local hospitals. And the Supreme Court looked at that and they said that's not constitutional because there's no medical purpose, there's no medical advantage. It doesn't make the procedure any safer to have doctors have admitting privileges. And the fact of the matter is, hospitals deny admitting privileges all the time. It's not about whether the doctor's a good doctor. It can be about the fact that the hospital has its own staff doctors. It can be about the fact that abortion's very safe. And so you don't transfer patients to hospitals. So they don't give admitting privileges. The doctors that don't practice in their hospitals, and they could just not like abortion providers. And so the Supreme Court said, look, it's having a huge impact by closing clinics throughout Texas. It's not constitutional, and it's got to go. And after that, all these states that had passed those kind of laws on admitting privileges either gave up fighting them or the other lower court said, that's right, we're going to follow the Supreme Court. Louisiana is in open defiance of the Supreme Court's ruling in 2016. And that's why we're back up there.
So admitting privileges within 30 miles, what does that mean for the clinics that are operating in that state? How many clinics are there and how difficult is it for those clinics to stay open if they have to have a physician who has those admitting privileges?
Well, as was established at trial here, it's very difficult in Louisiana, and there are only three clinics left in the state. As recent as 2011, there were seven clinics in Louisiana. Back in the 1980s, there were over 15 clinics in Louisiana. We're down to just three in the state. And as was found at trial, if this were to go into effect, and there will be just one doctor left in Louisiana to provide abortion services for the 1 million women of reproductive health age. And that is just not enough.
Writers in the National Review, they argue states like Wisconsin and Alabama gave up their regulations too soon, that they report that Louisiana is right to argue there's no undue burden on women because abortion facilities can remain open. What do you hear in that argument?
Well, it's just false. I mean, we saw in Texas, there were 40 clinics in Texas before the regulations there went into effect. They would have closed half the clinics in the state. And in Louisiana, it was proved at trial. I mean, we had a full trial on this, and it was proved at trial that there would be just one doctor left. They just cannot keep the clinics open.
We're looking at litigation around reproductive health in America, here in Wisconsin as well, with attorney Nancy Northup. She leads the Center for Reproductive Rights. What are you watching for in the courts when it comes to reproductive health? What do you want to know about these cases in the context of Roe versus Wade? How do you want to see state legislatures act right now? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Nancy, abortion legislation across the country, you have said, has really been stepping up. Lots of bills being introduced. in states and across the country addressing admitting privileges for doctors. What are you seeing out there with what states are doing?
Well, there have been hundreds of restrictions on abortions passed in the last several years. And we see a whole range. We see this year quite extreme laws. Alabama banned abortion altogether. Now, that's been blocked by the courts, and it's always important to say that because you want to make sure that people know that these laws are not in effect. You also had other states passing bans as early as 6 weeks in pregnancy. You have them passing requirements about waiting periods. You have them pass blockings on funding. And all of this makes it harder and harder for women to access abortion care. Abortion is one of the safest procedures that women have, and it's one of the most common. One in four women in the United States will have an abortion in her lifetime. And so they need to be able to get good care in their own communities.
Where does this all stand in the context of Roe versus Wade, 1973, legalizing abortion in America?
The reality is, despite the fact there's been this ongoing attack, that the constitutional protections are strong. The Supreme Court has reaffirmed again and again since 1973 the core facts of that holding, that women have a constitutional right under the guarantees of personal liberty, just the same kind of guarantees about why we can decide how we raise our children and who we marry, that they have a right to make that decision about whether to terminate a pregnancy in the early months, and that the government cannot make the decision for women, and they cannot make the decision about what her reasons are for having an abortion. And that has been reaffirmed. It was reaffirmed in Planned Parenthood versus Casey in 1992, where the court made clear, look, there is a zone of personal liberty that the government may not enter. That is one of the most important guarantees in our Constitution, that we make the important lifetime decisions for ourselves.
I mean, what I'm hearing here is case precedent, but we have the Supreme Court hearing this case out of Louisiana that you said was decided 3 years ago. What's going on there?
Well, I think that's what's going on is a state like Louisiana has said, I'm not going to listen to the Supreme Court, and I'm going to hope that the Supreme Court's going to render a different decision because President Trump has put two different justices on the Supreme Court. So I think their open defiance of, and we've seen this in history in different areas. We saw it during the civil rights period. Some states just saying, I'm not going to follow Supreme Court constitutional protection of rights. And this is one of those cases. Unfortunately, you know, the president ran saying he was going to put justices on the Supreme Court who are going to overturn Roe versus Wade. And states like Louisiana are saying, okay, I want to test that and find out if that's true.
Are these smaller, perhaps, restrictions, some having more of an impact than others, but are they perhaps nibbling on the edges of Roe versus Wade, little tests here and there?
Well, this is an attempt to try to take a kind of backdoor to getting at blocking women from having access to abortion. And I say a backdoor because they're not saying in Louisiana here, like Alabama did, we're just banning abortion. They're trying to put up what is really a pretextual reason. We claim that this is going to help women, but in fact, it's going to close clinics. And so, but I don't think of it as a chipping away because okay. It would have the effect of like taking a sledgehammer in Louisiana against access. Again, they have three clinics, and it would leave just one clinic open.
We have attorney Nancy Northup with us this hour. She's CEO of the Center for Reproductive Rights, which is lead counsel, by the way, in the Louisiana case being heard before the Supreme Court involving admitting privileges law. What is your place in this conversation? How does your gender identity affect the way you think about reproductive health? What do you think of the abortion-related bills you're seeing from legislatures? How do you feel about legislation out of Wisconsin this year? Join in at 800-642-1234. Back in a moment. More conversation here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're looking at the legislating around reproductive health, specifically abortion, and how Wisconsin fits into the broader context of the national litigation and the national trends. It is an hour-long conversation here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Polls show this issue will play a big role in the 2020 elections. A Monmouth poll from June showed 64% of voters said the issue of abortion will play an important role in who they vote for president. Your insights, your questions, they're welcome. How should we be talking about reproductive health? Do you wish we could have a more nuanced, less polarized discussion on abortion? How do we get there? We're at 800-642-1234. Nancy Northup is president of the Center for Reproductive Rights, and she stays with us. Let's go to the phones now. Eric is joining us from Madison. Hi, Eric.
Hi. There was a good program on Frontline on the Federalist Society, and basically Mitch McConnell started it back in all the 80s. And so there's a list of these extreme right-wing law students that have joined the Federalist Society, and that's what they're picking the Supreme Court justices from. Specifically Trump, and Clarence Thomas was a member of it, and as long as that happens, we're gonna have more extreme right-wing judges versus non-biased judges, which it should be. And so then expect more radical right-wing laws.
So Eric, Eric, you find that there is a bias on the Supreme Court. And how does that reflect how you would view an issue such as a case on abortion law?
Well, it religion and shouldn't play a part in abortion laws. That's just that simple. And but that's what we're seeing is judges being influenced by their.
Nancy, your thoughts here.
Well, I think that, Eric makes a very good case about the concern about how partisan the battles over the Supreme Court nominations have been, and that there are groups that are now playing a role in influencing the type of judges that are nominated for the Supreme Court. And to have, the president running saying that he was going to select judges that were going to overturn Roe versus Wade, all of it is very concerning. What I look to in this case is that we would hope that even those judges, justices on the court who did not agree, did not vote with the majority in Whole Woman's Health, and Chief Justice Roberts is one of them, that they really understand that in this case, it's the Supreme Court's integrity that it's at stake. All of us count on the court to uphold the rule of law, to protect our constitutional rights, and to be independent of partisan politics. And it's really such a crucial time in our democratic institutions to be sure that it is an unstable time, to make sure that the court is not seen as another partisan actor. And we are going to be looking to make the case to this court that whoever put them on the court, this is a very straightforward case in terms of the court having ruled just 3 years ago, having ruled that admitting privileges are unconstitutional, and to follow it here. And we are really looking to the court to do what it is there to do, which is to follow the Constitution.
Eric, thanks. Let's go to Melinda now, who is calling from northern Wisconsin. Hi, Melinda. What's on your mind?
Hello. I'd just like to actually encourage the courts to look into this further. I do not believe that abortion is a reproductive birth control issue. They're separate. And it should be something that should be terminated. You're talking to someone who was a younger mother, someone who took responsibility for my actions. Use the services and different things that are out there to help support my children and myself, and did that on my own. And it is not something that's it's a life changer, but it's not something that can ruin your life. A child is a blessing, and I am not some part of the right wing, like your last caller said, and my beliefs don't come from that. It's a separate issue. We have no need for abortion in our society anymore. We have the technology, and you're not able to fool women anymore. And thinking that this is just something that we should continue with in our
Melinda,
world right
yeah,
now.
Melinda, thanks. What role, Nancy, might contraceptives play here in making abortion less utilized, or as Melinda says, completely not utilized.
Well, Melinda is certainly right that the more prevalence of contraceptive today have dropped the abortion rates. So we are at a lower point on abortion rates today than we were, say, 25 years ago. And the increase in contraceptives is really important. And one of the most important forward things for women's health was in the Affordable Care Act, which guarantees that in health plans, contraception, because it's preventative medicine, will be available at no cost. That has unquestionably been important. But the reality is that there will still be women who will need access to abortion services. Not every kind of contraception is fail-proof. And in addition, increasingly, it becomes an issue for we still don't have universal health care. So not everyone has a health care program where contraception is available. And increasingly, abortion is becoming an issue that affects most strongly low-income, rural women. And that we have to make sure that everyone can make the decision for herself.
We're talking with Nancy Northup. She's CEO of the Center for Reproductive Rights, and her organization is the lead counsel in a case before the Supreme Court involving admitting privileges law. What is your place in the conversation? What questions do you have about organizations that have a stance on the issue of abortion? How does that affect policy? We're at 800-642-1234. Nancy, let's turn to Wisconsin here for a moment. Our state legislature is under Republican control, and lawmakers passed four measures earlier this year that the governor vetoed in June. One of the bills would require medical attention for a baby born alive following an attempt at abortion. It's called the Born Alive Bill, extremely rare occurrence. Are other states trying to pass similar measures here?
Well, there's a lot of copycat measures across the country. So some of the bills that you saw in Wisconsin this year are the kind of bills that you see in other states. I mean, it's part of a concerted effort, a long time concerted effort to, as you said before, look at every kind of angle to cut access to abortion. And what's really, I think, sometimes surprising for people maybe in Wisconsin to even realize is that we have a report, you can find it on our website at reproductiverights.org, on what would happen if Roe fell. And we look at each state in terms of how much protection is there, are there constitutional protections, is there statutory protections in your state. And we have rated Wisconsin to be a hostile state. And that means that you have to be very alert in this state to the fact that you are going to be facing, as you were this year, but they were vetoed, a slew of anti-choice bills. And it's important for everybody in Wisconsin that supports women's ability to access reproductive health care, and particularly to be able to access safe and legal abortion, to have their voices heard at the state legislatures and in their communities.
Let's go to Jeremy now in Racine. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My wife and I, we're both pro-life. We understand the purpose of Planned Parenthood. We understand a lot of the other services. They do far more than just abortion, cancer screenings, things like that. We feel that we just do not want our tax dollars funding for abortion. That's where we stand, and I think that's where a lot of people who are pro-life, they kind of, that's where they put the line in the sand. We understand what Planned Parenthood is for. We understand there's a lot of good services. But when it comes to the abortion, we just don't like to see our tax dollars funding those services.
Jeremy, thanks so much for the call. What is the role here of Planned Parenthood? Because certainly there's been also a change in leadership, and Planned Parenthood is really connected to the abortion issue.
So it's important to remember, Jeremy, that tax dollars don't go to support Planned Parenthood for abortion services. It's been the fact that federal law doesn't permit that. And so the funding that Planned Parenthood raises for abortion services are raised from other sources for people who do want to support that. And it is so important that Planned Parenthood and other reproductive health providers are there to provide the full range of services for women. So they can have access to contraception. They can have access to STI screening. And it's important to realize that, you know, the funding issue that I talked to about before, we do feel that all healthcare insurance programs, be it Medicaid, be it private insurance, they should cover the range of healthcare services, including services for abortion. Because, again, we're talking about for many people, the cost is too much, and everyone needs to be able to make these decisions for themselves, regardless of whether they are low income or not.
We're talking about reproductive health care, the surge of legislation around the country to restrict access to abortion clinics. Attorney Nancy Northup is CEO of the Center for Reproductive Rights. She's giving us an overview. What questions do you have about how organizations and groups with a stance on the issue of abortion, how they affect policy? Who do you see influencing regulations right now? How does it affect your life? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. There's a place for you this hour. We'll be back to this conversation with Nancy Northup right after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We're having an hour-long conversation here with the CEO of the Center for Reproductive Rights here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. There have been hundreds of new abortion restrictions introduced this year in state legislatures around the country, including here in Wisconsin. And the Supreme Court, it's taking up a Louisiana law that was nearly identical to one the High Court struck down in 2016. And the Center for Reproductive Rights is lead counsel challenging the Louisiana Admitting Privileges Law. We thought we'd get more context on how the litigation is impacting reproductive health care in America and here in Wisconsin. And your perspective on this is welcome through the hour, 800-642-1234. And the center's CEO, Nancy Northup, is our guide. She stays with us. Let's go back to the phones now. Martha is joining us from Menominee. Hi, Martha.
Hi, good morning. I'm wondering if you could get your guest to address the role of racism in these laws and the resurgence of the efforts to establish these laws. We know that the incidence of abortion goes down as women get more educated and enter the workforce. However, a lot of programs that support women education, economic opportunities are being cut at the same time that we're seeing these laws increase. So I'm wondering if your guest could address the role of the Hyde Amendment and the role of racism, systematic racism in the system affecting this.
Martha, thanks for the call. And she specifically would like to address the Hyde Amendment. Can you help us understand that?
Yes. Well, after Roe versus Wade in 1973 ruled that states had to ensure access to abortion and that abortion be legal, unfortunately, one of the first things that the United States Congress did a few years later was pass the Hyde Amendment. And what the Hyde Amendment says is that in federal programs such as the Medicaid program, which is health insurance for low-income people, that abortion would not be covered except in circumstances, it's moved over time, but basically in the very limited circumstances as cases of rape, incest, and severe life-threatening situations. And that leaves a lot of women on Medicaid unable to have it covered by their insurance. And in go back to Louisiana, where this case is coming out of, I mean, the vast majority of women in Louisiana who have abortions are poor or low income. And 70% of the abortion patients in Louisiana are women of color. And so you're seeing a tremendous impact on those who have the least ability to go to another state, if they have to go to another state. I mean, one of the things that's so important to remember about access to abortion is that even in the United States, before 1973, when abortion was illegal in almost every state, that women with means always could get abortions. They went to Canada, they went to England, and they can get access, or they went to doctors in the United States who were providing safe abortions, even though it was not legal. And this is true all over the world today. There are still millions and millions of women who live in countries that ban abortion entirely or severely restrict access, and women of means have always been able to get abortion. It falls the hardest on low-income women, and that, unfortunately, is the legacy of the Hyde Amendment. But I will say that, you know, Congress is now engaged on this. There is legislation in both the House and the Senate called the Each Woman Act, and that would permanently repeal the Hyde Amendment. And it's something that several years ago people thought, wow, we can't get any traction on this in Washington. And here you have both the House and Senate have introduced bills. And so it's important to share your views with your representatives in Congress to make sure that they know that we feel that health care should be available to everyone, regardless of income.
And you're encouraging Congress to approve the Women's Health Protection Act. What does that do?
Yeah, so the Each Woman Act we were just talking about is to reverse the Hyde Amendment. And the Women's Health Protection Act is an important bill that would address the type of restrictions that you're seeing in Louisiana before the Supreme Court. It would basically say that states cannot enact laws that are not medically based and that are not put on other similar providers. So, for example, if there is a medical regulation that applies to all OBGYNs or all doctors, you know, providing out, you know, patient care, that's fine. If every single doctor in the state has to have admitting privileges, okay, that's fine. It's a statewide law. We can assume it's not some underhanded law to go against access to abortion. But if it is specifically singling out abortion, does not advance women's health, then it would be unable to be law under the Women's Health Protection Act. And right now, there's over 212, I think, sponsors in the House, and we are looking to have a hearing and get it passed in the House this year. So again, it's very important that I think sometimes people think Washington doesn't do anything or what point does it make to make a point about that. But it's really important because with enough advocacy over time, these bills will become law. And I want to say that your own senator in the state, Tammy Baldwin, is one of the lead co-sponsors, always has been since it was first introduced in 2013, of the Women's Health Protection Act. So say thank you to Senator Baldwin when you can.
Wisconsin's Democratic congressional delegation is on board with that bill. Our state's Republican members of Congress have not voiced support. How does political party affect the future of this legislation?
Well, unfortunately, right now, the parties are very divided on the issue of access to abortion. But, you know, this is not was not historically true. And so I think people should take the fact that it does not have to be true in the future. I mean, when the issue first came up in the 1970s, there were as many Republicans as Democrats who were supporting of abortion rights. People might forget that in the 1976 election, Republican Gerald Ford was the pro-choice candidate and Democrat Jimmy Carter was the anti-choice candidate. So there's nothing magical about this in terms of the partisanship. It's been unfortunately used as a wedge issue, and people should make sure that whatever party they are, if they're independent, that they let their electeds know where they stand on the issue. It should not be one that is made a partisan issue. It's a healthcare issue, and it's an issue of the personal decision making for women. We should get it out of politics.
We're talking about reproductive health and the litigation and the legislative policy we're seeing here in recent times. Nancy Northup is president of the Center for Reproductive Rights, and she stays with us. How should we talk about reproductive rights? Do you wish we could have a more nuanced, less polarized discussion on abortion? How do you think we get there? We're at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Jesse now, joining us from Brown Deer. Hi, Jesse.
Hi. I was listening, and it seems like a lot of your listeners are very interested. And I'm just curious, what is like the best way to get updated and accurate information about abortion, and abortion stats, and abortion rates?
Well, I can think of various places you can go. Certainly do check out our website, reproductiverights.org. The Guttmacher Institute is a very important research organization that does research both in the United States and abroad. They track state laws. They also look at the different abortion rates. And you can even go to the Center for Disease Control, which also is tracking these things. So there's a lot of places where you can get reputable and accurate information about the kind of statistics that you've asked about.
Jesse, thanks for the call. And, you know, I think, and Jesse might be touching on this a little bit, but are there non-biased sources for information, sources that don't have a particular position, that are just putting the information out there, putting the statistics out there? You know, would that be federal government data?
Well, again, yes, there's federal government data on the Center for Disease Control, but the Guttmacher Institute has been looked at by both sides for a long time as having accurate research information. So I really recommend them.
Wisconsin's governor vetoed, as we said earlier, bills. One of the bills that requires providers to tell women that they can reverse a medical abortion after taking the first dose of medication. Is the so-called abortion pill reversal gaining traction in the states?
Well, first of all, I want to say it is not true. So I want to make sure your listeners understand that it's not reversible. There's two pills that you take with medication abortion, and it's not reversible. And so Wisconsin and several other states, unfortunately, again, we have these copycat litigation laws going on, have passed it. We're suing right now in North Dakota, which passed a similar law. And the American Medical Association is a plaintiff in that lawsuit. The American Medical Association doesn't even take a position on abortion itself, whether it should be legal or not, but they take a position on false information being provided to patients by their doctors. It's a hugely issue of concern of interfering in the doctor-patient relationship. And unfortunately, we see these laws in other states, you know, doctors having to tell patients that breast cancer causes abortion. Again, the federal government has made clear in its research there's no link between breast cancer and abortion. So doctors have to tell you one thing. The state of North Dakota is telling you that this is reversible. I am telling you as your physician, it's not. And that is no way to have the government interfering in the provision of health care and the doctor-patient relationship.
Wisconsin state lawmakers earlier this year held a hearing in committee on birth control, and Republicans had floated a bill to allow pharmacists to provide hormonal birth control. Do you see that increasing around the country?
Well, I hope so. I mean, we do want to take down unnecessary barriers to getting access to contraception. And so other states have enacted laws where, yes, you can go and have a conversation with a pharmacist in order to get access to contraception. And that takes down a doctor's visit. And anything that takes away a barrier to make it more difficult is important. And, you know, we're now going to be looking at the Food and Drug Administration is going to be looking in the upcoming years about over-the-counter sale for contraception. That's the status in many countries around the world because it's safe and effective over-the-counter.
Talking with Nancy Northup, she's CEO of the Center for Reproductive Rights. We're having a discussion around reproductive health care in America, what legislation has surfaced, the litigation to push back on new clinic restrictions, and what it all means to codify Roe versus Wade, the 1973 landmark ruling that legalized abortion nationwide. Your insights, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're looking at recent abortion-related litigation and the outgrowth of state legislation, what this means in the broader context, broader framework of healthcare and women's reproductive health. You can join in. Do you want a more nuanced, less polarized discussion around abortion? How do we get there? What labels do you apply to yourself? Are you pro-choice, pro-life? Do you prefer anti-abortion or pro-abortion? How do labels affect this issue in America today? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Attorney Nancy Northup is CEO of the Center for Reproductive Rights. That is based in New York, and Nancy is in Madison here today. Nancy, WPR's State Capitol reporter told us this week that Wisconsin lawmakers may try to override four bills the governor vetoed. Do you see real consequences if that works here in Wisconsin or in other states? Is this about politics?
Well, unfortunately, as we've been talking about, the issue of women's reproductive health care has been highly politicized. And the fact that a state would change its entire democratic system about how vetoes get overrided because they want to be so sure to get these four abortion restrictions through is unfortunate, right? It would skew for all, it would apply to everything else that you've got going on that gets vetoed here in Wisconsin. And I think that is a shame. And so, I think the more that we can get this issue out of politics, that people can talk about it more as an issue that people are making decisions about in their personal life, the better. And I think it's just unfortunate that politicians continue to use this issue, this very highly personal issue, which, again, affects a lot of women. One in four is a lot of women in every state across the nation. And I think that's really regrettable.
Let's look at Planned Parenthood here once again. When Planned Parenthood announced a new facility in southern Illinois, the announcement indicated it was about 15 miles from the Missouri border because of Missouri's restrictions on abortion. How is Planned Parenthood adjusting to new restrictions?
Well, I think like all abortion providers, independent providers, as well as Planned Parenthood, they work really hard. I mean, that's the thing. There are hurdles that are put on clinics that shouldn't be there because they're medically unnecessary, but clinics do the best that they can to meet those hurdles, and women do the best they can to get around them to be able to meet patient care. So I think, you know, that's a very dedicated group of providers throughout the country who want to make sure that they are there for women. But it's not fair. I mean, I just can't fundamentally say how it is not fair to require women to have to overcome what they don't have to overcome to get other medical services.
When you look and talk with the physicians who are working at these clinics and who are working with the restrictions and the clinics trying to conform to the law, what is the life like for these doctors who work in this area?
I'm really glad that you asked about that, because doctors who provide abortion care are, unfortunately, because of the history of violence and intimidation and threats in this country, are often, quite frankly, putting their lives on the line to do this. And they are dedicated to their patients, and that is why they do it. And so they often have to take different routes to work every day, have to protect their homes as best they can to be safe places, and undergo a lot of, you know, threats, frankly. And so I think it is so important, again, that we be able to mainstream abortion care in the general realm of healthcare, so that these doctors don't have to be in the isolated positions in which they are.
Let's take another call now. Kelly is joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You know, personally, I've never had an abortion. I know the challenges of raising children. I have counseled a lot of women who have, as a minister, who have made the choice of abortion, and it was just a heart-wrenching choice for them. And I feel like this word of, like, pro-choice versus pro-life, like, pro-life indicates that you are pro-death if you're not pro-life. And I think these women, they are pro-life. They're pro their own life and trying to figure out how can I, when it comes down to making a choice of having an abortion, they're really making a choice in favor of their own life, and that's the only way they can see at that point. And I just wish that, like, that terminology would get out of it, because I think it just, when you say pro-life, on the flip side of that, you're saying I'm pro-death. And I think any of these women who have ever had an abortion are certainly not pro-death, but they're...
Kelly, how would you minister to these women? What would you tell them when they came to you?
You know, it was really... I think for these women, they were really wrestling with a lot of the stigma around it and the hardness of the choice and coming to peace with, you know, how do I move on? I mean, for some, it was really counseling and helping them sometimes get in touch with the spirit of the child that they didn't feel that they could bring into the world, and making peace with that. Sometimes, I don't know. I think for each case, it's different. I never ever heard of a woman who, or worked with a woman who had an abortion that didn't have a whole mixture of feelings.
Who didn't struggle.
Around it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but still at the end of it came out that in order for them to move forward in their own life, that was the only way. And they still realized that given the options that were on the table for them, they still had to make that choice.
Nancy?
Yeah.
Thanks, Kelly.
Well, I think that Kelly's experience as a minister really summarizes why this is an issue that's protected as a constitutional right, because no one walks in anybody else's shoes. And the decision about whether to continue a pregnancy is a highly personal decision. No two people are in the same circumstance. And that is what's been recognized. I mean, if you read the Supreme Court cases in this area, the court recognizes that it is a highly personal decision, that nobody will bear the decision as much as the woman in terms of her life path from that path. And that is why it is this part of what, as people living in a free society and this constitutional right to personal liberty, that we make the decision for ourselves.
The language we use when talking about abortion is often different than how medical professionals talk about it. What do our words say about our values?
Well, I think the words are important. And I think that it's important to, at the Center for Reproductive Rights, we actually work around the world on this issue. And we see reproductive rights, including access to safe and legal abortion, as a fundamental human right. And for all of the reasons that we've been talking about, it's about women's right to life, her right to health, her right to dignity, her right to be free from cruel, unusual, degrading treatment, her right to conscience, and other rights, her right to get an education and to be fully part of the social and political and economic life of her nation. So all of these things are what are involved about making the decisions about our bodies and our lives and our futures.
Very quickly, as we wrap up, the Supreme Court said this month it's hearing the Louisiana case. When will we see arguments? When will this be taken up?
Well, I was just on my offline with my office yesterday about this, and we are still working out when the argument date will be. It will be probably in early 2020, so January or February of 2020, and all the briefing is going to go on in the next several months.
Nancy, thanks for being here. Thanks for joining us.
I really appreciate your following the story.
Nancy Northup is CEO of the Center for Reproductive Rights. She's speaking at the Freedom From Religion Foundation National Convention that gets underway today in Madison. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.